on a Thursday. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. Stay with us next hour as we get your reaction to the testimony from former special counsel Robert Mueller. We'll have analysis and insights for you after 7. But first, let's talk about computer-generated imagery, CGI, in Hollywood. It's getting bolder and perhaps more experimental with how we blur the lines between a human, that real-life actor, and something digitized. You get a curious blend that may not sit so well with moviegoers, an example being the Jellicle Cats. The iconic Broadway musical Cats is being made into a film. The trailer dropped last week, and social media got all worked up over incredibly realistic digital fur, CGI, that, take my word, does not translate to radio. You must see it for yourself. But here's a bit of the featurette with director Tom Hooper and actor James Corden.
We've used digital fur technology to create the most perfect covering of fur.
These are people, but they're cats, and this is kind of blowing my mind.
Kind of blowing my mind. How do you feel about CGI in movies today? What films are pushing the envelope for you in a good way? Which ones miss the mark? We're at 800-642-1234. Ann Hornaday is chief film critic for The Washington Post. Ann, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
So CGI has been long part of the film industry, and the quality of the technology has never been better. Yet over the years, there are examples of it just kind of going awry. What is the rub there? When does CGI not sit well?
Well, the term of art that people use for it is the uncanny valley. And I think the movie that I first remember when the uncanny valley was a big, big thing was The Polar Express. Mm. If you remember that movie with Tom Hanks, mm-hmm. which was just this, it was just this eerie combination of animation, you know, like motion capture animation that was based on human performance, but animated, just leaving behind the artifacts of the humanness, I don't know, in a way that was unsettling rather than immersive, you know? I mean, I think when people react poorly to things like the Cats trailer, it's because what should be kind of an immersive aesthetic experience becomes a jarring one and an unpleasant one. And I do think that, you know, a lot of these movies, and for me, another prime offender was the movie Speed Racer. It was, again, this kind of combination they wanted. I respected the experiments of them because these filmmakers, I guess this was sort of relatively the early days of this kind of filmmaking, and they were seeing how far they could kind of push the aesthetics. They wanted to create living cartoons, and you know, I think that they might have succeeded in terms of a technological feat, but the psychological and emotional reaction from the audience is just like very, very off-putting.
Well, as a movie critic, how do you separate out creepy CGI from the overall aesthetic, the overall experience and quality of a movie?
You do. I mean, I think that what I try to do is appreciate if something is a technical achievement and I understand what they're going for, I do try to express that and support it. But then at the same time, I can't deny it if it's rubbing me the wrong way, you know? And I just think that it's part of the territory in this time when there's the advances are so rapid that people are kind of, they're experimenting in real time, and we're seeing these. I mean, if this is a little bit off the topic, but if you even look at the progress that's been made between the first Toy Story, which was the first computer animated movie, the difference between that first one 25 years ago and then this latest one, you can see how far that technology has gone just with those movies alone. And Pixar has used pretty much every single movie it's ever made to push technology and to make it better. So I guess, you know, but to your point about being a critic, I just think that movies operate on several levels at once. And a good critic, I hope, would appreciate those levels as discrete things and then kind of take the overall measure of the movie.
We're talking with Anne Hornaday. She is chief film critic for The Washington Post, looking at CGI, animation, and how technology impacts the movies we see. How do you feel about computer-generated imagery or CGI in movies today? Do you dislike when visuals are a bit too lifelike? What happens in your brain? What does it make you feel? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And earlier this year, a trailer for the new Sonic the Hedgehog, got the internet all worked up. Fans revolted against the trailer, calling it freaky, asking, why doesn't animated hedgehog have human teeth? Apparently, the feedback was so bad that the producers announced they'd be completely redesigning Sonic. what's the takeaway there?
Well, it's the fan. I mean, that's about fan culture and kind of fan service. And this intense feedback loop between the fans and the makers, and aesthetic expectations changing, and also and then the industry itself being in a position to be more responsive. I mean, that's actually a really fascinating. That's a fascinating little. Little case study there. And I mean, you could even look at the rise of Comic-Con, you know, that huge convention of comic book fans. They had just wield so much power now, you know, in terms of what gets made and what we're seeing. I mean, it's almost like we have a Comic-Con culture now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really quite fascinating. But again, I guess it does come down to this kind of, you know, sometimes I'm not even sure, like they could point to specific things they didn't like about the design of that character, but you know, sometimes it's just something you can't even put your finger on, but it's just bugging you, you know? And I think there has been a little bit of divisiveness around the new Lion King around some of those issues too. That's kind of surprised me, but you know, this new Lion King has been made to look hyper, hyper, hyper photo realistic. In other words, it looks, for all intents and purposes, it looks like a nature documentary.
Hmm.
And I think the director Jon Favreau put one authentically live action shot into the movie just to test to see if anybody could pick it out. But other than that brief shot, everything has been computer generated, and it is so perfectly rendered. That I just forgot. I didn't even think about it, you know, after those initial scenes, because I so deeply bought the conceit, and it was so beautiful. But some have accused that of going into that CGI. Another term of art is dead eyes. You know, like the characters have these dead, weird eyes.
Right.
I didn't think so at all. I think these characters have animal eyes. And you know, they're not human, you know, they're not humanly expressive eyes, but they are authentic animal eyes. And we do the emotional work of kind of, you know, we and the voice actors are filling in those emotional blanks. So I mean, I think it's often a question of personal taste and personal threshold too.
It's, and then wondering how you define it. It's not quite like Lion King, not quite live action, not quite animated. Like, how do you
exactly
start categorizing things anymore?
When I was watching that one, that was my question. It's like, what is this? Because you're right. It's not animation. It's animated. And I wonder even, I mean, I would imagine that this will compete in the animated category at the Oscars. But I did have a fleeting thought of, gee, will it? I mean, would it? Is this, you know, it's so unlike any animated film that we've seen up until now. Because it is animated and that it's all synthetically done, it's based on real world imagery that they captured, but it is an animated film, you know, with those voice actors. So I think it does qualify. But it's a really interesting, and again, that was a movie that was kind of, we saw the beginnings of that with Favreau's adaptation of The Jungle Book, which did have live action in it, but also had a great deal of computer generated imagery for the animals, and that was stunning. But this is taking it into whole new levels. I mean, you played that little trailer, the featurette about cats, and they talked about fur technology.
Yes, yes.
The fur and the wind patterns and water. I mean, they've all been historically very difficult to capture with animation, and all of those things are just at the peak of their technological capacities.
So would cats and this fur thing be an example of that uncanny valley?
Yeah, you know what? And I, to my shame, I still haven't. I brought myself to watch that Cats trailer.
But oh my goodness!
I know, isn't that awful? I try to stay away from them because I try to kind of go into things with fresh, you know. But I have. I've seen enough. Let me just put it this way: I've seen enough, and I do. I understand. That it is weird. I mean, that is some weird stuff right there. It's, I mean, like I said earlier, you know, impressive, you know, in terms of that, I see what they're trying to do, and it's impressive, but I can't necessarily say that I like what I see.
Well, going back to Disney, do you think Disney gets a pass in a way because we're more accepting of what it is doing with its remakes in terms of technology?
Well, that's a really good question. It'll be interesting to me. I mean, Disney, to your point, they've always done that. I mean, they've always been on the cutting edge of animation. And then they've also always been very, very careful stewards of their intellectual property. And that's always been their business model. It's just that now I feel, you know, part of their strategy I don't know how old you are. I'm old enough to remember they would hold things back. They would take things out of circulation for years and years and years. And then, right? And that was how they did it, because that was how you did it in the old school. And I think it's disorienting for me and my generation to see them be so aggressive with putting things, not holding things back, but putting things out in such rapid succession. So it's like, we get the remake, we get the prequel, we get the, you know, sequel, we get the da-da-da-da, we get the live action version. And they're just, it's so rapid fire. And it is often concomitant with these technological leaps. And so, yeah, it is a little bit disorienting. And I do wonder if the audience is going to tire of it. Yeah.
Pause right there with Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday as our guide here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about CGI, cat humans, and other ways Hollywood is using technology to blur the lines between humans and something else. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Universal Pictures released its first trailer for the much-anticipated Cats musical adaptation, and then came the CGI fur uproar. We see cats walking around on their hind legs with human limbs and faces. It could be an acquired taste for moviegoers, but it's a good time to talk about CGI in our film experience with your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. Will you see cats for the CGI? What movies are pushing the envelope in a good way, and which ones miss the mark for you? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday is our guide, and she stays with us. So, Anne, when you look at Hollywood and the highest grossing films of the year, you know, you've got like Avengers in there, you know, pushing close to almost $1 billion. These are all films that have technology and CGI really as part of their backbone. What does that say about the direction where Hollywood is going?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, and I would love if your listeners tell me I wonder, and again, this might be more generational than anything else. You know, we now have a generation that's just grown up with CGI as a part. That is movie. That's what movies look like for them. And I don't think they even distinguish anymore. And I don't even know if people really care about, like, if they're going to go see this new Lion King. I suppose a lot of people will go out of curiosity to see the technology, you know, they'll have the technology in mind. But even if they're going with that in mind, what the movie makers want, I'm sure, is for them to forget about it and just become very lost in the story and care about the characters and just get totally into it. For Hollywood's part, it's just a tool in the toolbox. And it's kind of a piece with this business model we're in the midst of, which is very blockbuster oriented. It's very oriented to studios mining their archives for the intellectual properties they already own so that they can remake them cheap. And it's all, that's all about saving some money.
Economy,
and also
yeah.
minimizing risk. I mean, they want things that are sure bets, and whether that means serving the pre-existing fans of that property here in the United States, or more increasingly now, getting Chinese filmmakers interested. I mean, a lot of these movies, even if they don't do well here, they're going to do really well overseas now. And so that's, it used to be that they were making movies for 14-year-old boys, and that's why they made comic book movies. Now they're making comic book movies because they're easy to export, and they don't need a lot of complicated translating, and special effects are a universal language.
And oh, so I think the international box office is a huge influence. How you're
it's becoming, yes, yeah. definitely. I mean, that is something that has changed over the last, you know, as these countries are building out more and more theaters, they're eager for content and product. This is it. And this is the kind of content and product that is, like I said, easily translatable and easily exportable. But I do think Hollywood, the industry, would make a mistake if they think that's the only thing that sells. Because, for example, the movie Green Book, which is a very human story, which I don't think had any CGI in it, certainly didn't have any explosions or fireballs, that did extraordinarily well in China. And it did very well in other overseas markets. And Spike Lee's Black Klansman did very well overseas last year. So I think, I hope that the industry doesn't just say, well, if we throw enough bells and whistles at them and big explosions and things that go boom and things that are loud and shiny and CGI, that that'll be enough. No, I mean, I think it always comes down to the fundamentals of good scripts and good stories, great characters and fine actors. And, you know, those are the ultimate special effects, those fundamentals. And so, but I do think that it's all wrapped up together. The CGI goes with the special effects, goes with the comic books, goes with this kind of overarching tentpole business model that they seem very attached to right now.
Talking with Anne Hornaday, she is chief film critic for The Washington Post. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234, with your experiences watching CGI movies and where you see them headed. Let's go to Brian now in Milwaukee with thoughts on this. Hi, Brian.
Hi. My thought on this was the fact that how the movie companies have really been trying to push the envelope. When you look back at movies like Forrest Gump, when they had Tom Hanks' character be in front of old presidents who have now passed away, and how they have these interactions. You know, that movie came on and was a huge controversy about trying to get the movie banned.
Brian, thanks so much for bringing that. So we've seen these moments before, Anne.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, that, like Polar Express, those were both Robert Zemeckis films. People like Robert Zemeckis, James Cameron, I mean, the industry, you know, there are these filmmakers that have historically been on that cutting edge and been willing to experiment. And to Brian's point, he's right. Like, and that, again, that was 25 years ago. And it was just shocking. And of course, you know, Woody Allen did it in a more low tech way with Zelig. And now we don't even think anything of it. And a big example, or kind of adjacent example, that's coming out this year is the new Martin Scorsese movie with Robert De Niro and, Al Pacino. And they're going to be de-aged in that movie, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
And so the whole notion of de-aging, you know, seeing the younger, I'm trying to remember now, we've seen a couple recently of movies with younger versions of older actors that were fab, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy has done it. And that's another technology that I think we've seen them perfect in real time over the years, to the point where now it's pretty seamless. I mean, I don't remember the last time I thought it was cheesy and gross. You know, I mean, it's looking pretty good.
So do these films spark your imagination still, or do they leave less room for you to imagine anymore because everything is there for you? Everything is served up on that platter in the visuals.
I think that's a great question. And I think that's, you know, it's really funny because when I saw this version of The Lion King, it reminded me of a little TV show I watched as a kid called Tales of the Riverbank, which was a very gentle, sweet little show, and it black and white, you know, and it filmed real live animals, and then it had human actors do voiceovers for them. And it was, talk about low tech. Mm. I mean, my goodness, it was analog at its most analog. But it had a lot of imagination. You know, it left that room for imagination. And that's kind of what this one did for me, you know? I mean, it even though it's so kind of overworked and overproduced, it harkened back to that simpler thing. I mean, it's almost doing that same simple thing, just in a much more complicated, complex, technologically sophisticated way.
And Hornaday, are we at a moment here? Would you compare what is going on right now with CGI to any moment in film history evolution?
Oh, that's a great question, Kate. Well, you know, I think sound, I mean, we've always been paid more attention to visuals than sound, but you know, there was a great revolution in movie sound in the 70s and 80s as well, with people like George Lucas and Walter Murch, again, pushing that envelope, coming up with Dolby, coming up with multi-channel sound and sound effects. That was less obvious because I think people just physically, physiologically don't, you know, we don't have the same reaction to sound as we do to image. But it's the rapidity of it. And there's an internet term for this where progress is just so exponentially, you know, quicker now. The windows between eras are shorter, you know, in terms of before and after. And so I just think that's what's so stunning.
Well, Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a fun conversation.
Anne Hornaday is chief film critic for The Washington Post. Be sure to stay with us next hour. We have analysis on former special counsel Robert Mueller's testimony yesterday to Congress with time for your reaction. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.